Blog Talk Radio.
The eve of 9/11, okay, what do we have?
the great idiot Obama, okay, coming out and saying, oh, you know, we must bomb Syria, okay? You know, I mean, it's too much. It's too much, Lila. I'm sorry. I mean, the hypocrisy is too much. Lila is a union person. She believes in unions. I do, too. But, you know, I'm telling you, when the unions are wrong, they don't speak out for the people. They don't speak out for what's right. You know, they hide everything, all right? And I'm saying, you know, you're wrong, right? That's what this show is about. If you don't like it, tune off, right?
I think one of the things that that's important that they're doing is that they're union, global unions, because it's the only way that you can raise the cost of living and make people be paid better wages. I mean, you can't have these boundaries like Mexico, the Mexico border, and then pay people nothing who live 2 miles away. And then they pour over our border.
Yeah, but we just
it's just wrong.
So I was going to read an article tonight that 40,000 longshoremen left the AFL-CIO because they told them to shove it, because Obamacare is destroying they can't live with the whole Obamacare thing, and they won't support Obamacare. They think he's a fraud. They think the Obamacare is a fraud as well, and they're ruining their contracts. Okay, so 40,000 longshoremen dropped out of the AFL-CIO. Want nothing to do with
them. What happened with the United Steelworkers?
Same thing. They're dropping out. Everybody, AFL-CIO is a loser. I'm sorry, they're losing all their affiliates because they're aligning with the Democrats. They're aligning with poor judgment, and they believe that Obama is some kind of a savior. And he's nothing more than a fraud. He's nothing more than destroyer.
Unfortunately, he's had a very poor leadership.
He's horrible. Terrible.
And
he's destroyed unions. He hasn't helped any unions. Mm-hmm. He's destroyed them. All right.
He's not done some good things. He's not really been supportive of unions in the way that's important.
No.
I don't think.
No. I think
that the leadership has to realize that. The ordinary union members is beginning to think, well, what is this president? We supported him.
Thank you, Lila.
Those things are important. But they need to put up people from the union that they think can really make a difference. They need to support people who can make a difference with
working
people.
It doesn't make sense,
but
it doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't seem like they're putting up anybody who makes any sense. I mean, even the president. The president of these unions are nothing more than lackeys to the Democratic Party. No?
Yes.
You know that.
Well, I think they have to reach out to broader interests. I think they've become too casual with Republicans and Democrats. There are other people out there.
Yes. And they're forgetting. They're forgetting that the entire nation hates Obama, okay?
Well, before that, a lot of people didn't like Bush.
No, but,
I mean,
but you know
Republicans
what? Bush had a,
and
Bush
Democrats.
Had, but you know what's funny? Bush had a higher rating overall than Obama does. Imagine that, right? And Congress under Bush had a 20% approval. Under Obama, they have a 10% approval.
Well,
right?
People are becoming more aware of what's happening. For instance, right now, Obama wanted to do this strike in Syria. And you talk to ordinary people like myself, everybody doesn't want to go into war.
Of course not.
Because there's no reason to. I mean, you can reach out diplomatically, and I hope that diplomatic solution works and is the answer for the people in this country that want to be so aggressive. I don't know what's going to happen, but I can tell you that in my workplace, all the people that speak out are against it. I mean, there may be some people supporting it. They're in a minority and they're not saying anything because the majority is feeling that it's a really bad thing.
Yeah. It's like I've been searching this AFL-CIO blog today. And I found there's very little positive information on it. right.
Well, things are very bleak.
Not only for unions, but for anybody. Right?
Things seem to be very bleak.
But, you know, it's the responsibility of a union to support and inspire their people.
Well, they're reforming bankruptcy laws, and, well, I think that's important because they're rigged against, because they're stacked up against working people.
Well, why don't we read that one and tell you and see what really isn't happening here, right?
And I think, you know, they're doing some things that don't get a lot of attention in the press. Here it says, bankruptcy laws are rigged against working people. Employers, corporations, and lenders often exploit these laws to weaken our retirement security. That's true. Cut health care and leave young workers saddled with student loan debt without the prospect of a good job or the ability to discharge the debt through bankruptcy. You're not allowed to discharge your student loan debt. Look no further than the coal giant Peabody Energy and Arch Coal, which created Patriot Coal to shed their obligations to tens of thousands of retired miners and their families, or the bankruptcy story of Hostess Brands, where on two separate occasions in the 2000s, Hostess workers, represented by the bakery confectionery, tobacco workers, and grain millers, made tremendous sacrifices to help the company emerge from bankruptcy. Yet, management did not reinvest those wage and benefit concessions back into the company. It improperly diverted workers' pension contributions to fund its operations and gave its CEO a 300% pay increase. That's criminal. When it became clear that the workers were going to fight these maneuvers, the company declared bankruptcy in 2012. Today, the AFL-CIO passed a convention resolution addressing the need to reform our country's bankruptcy laws to better shield workers from harm in the form of broken pension and health care promises and to diminish economic hardship that comes from these bankruptcies. Well, I hope they do go forward with that and put political pressure on place.
Yeah, you know,
because
it's all,
something
it's all
like
la-di-da.
That.
You know, it's all la-di-da until it actually happens. And then something happens.
Well, this hasn't happened before, that they've done something like that.
And why is that, Lila?
Because the companies haven't gone out of business in that fashion.
They've all gone out of business.
This has just happened in the past few years where
that's not true,
pensions...
They've been, I mean, back in 1980s when they did the Bonfire of the Vanities, okay, they showed how Wall Street, you know, the entire thing was greed is good. Do you remember that? Motto?
Vaguely.
Well, greed is good. Back in the 80s, you had people that were going in. The whole, that big movie was a huge
multi-billion-dollar
movie, and it got all kinds of Academy Awards, made Charlie Sheen a national hero, and what's his name?
Was Michael Douglas in that?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's greed is good. And it stated that that's what Michael Douglas in there was, a corporate raider. He went in, bought companies, and raided their pensions, and raided them, and bankrupted them, and then made all
kinds of
money.
Oh, I do remember that.
And that's been going on for years. And you know,
venture people.
Oh my God! All of a sudden, the unions are going in 2012, saying this isn't right. I mean, the absurdity of the whole thing.
What has happened is that things have been chiseled away gradually, and then we're left with something.
Yeah, but it got to the point, Lila, they actually made a movie about it in the 1980s, and what did the unions do? Nothing. Not a damn thing for 20 years, okay? All right, they didn't fight this thing for 20 years. All right.
Well,
we don't know
that that's true. They may have put in plenty of bills that got rejected by the stacked committees that we have in our legislature. We don't know. I can't say
I
that.
Love you to death,
but you can't. You can't. You can't say that because you don't know either.
I do know.
No,
nothing happened in those 20 years.
You don't know that. Nothing was written. Nothing was passed. That's probably true, but
you
don't know how many bills were put in.
They kept supporting Democratic assholes.
You don't know.
Who didn't do anything.
But you don't know.
Of course I do.
No, you don't.
Lila, I've been a voting person for the last 20, 30, 40 years, okay? And every time we vote for something to happen, nothing happens. And they screw unions, they screw everybody, they screw the world, okay? And it's not going to happen, okay? And now we're going, and we're supporting this whole stuff, and we're saying, yeah, yeah, go union, all right? But they're still not doing anything. They're still voting for Obama, okay, who's screwing them to death.
Well, they have to wake up and say,
yeah,
hey,
wake up.
We need
they're not
going to
wake up. How many union members do you have in your union who don't even give a damn, okay? Don't even go to union meetings. Don't care less. Okay?
Well, we have some, that's true.
Yeah.
But
and the others are Republicans, for Christ's sake.
And we have some that are Republicans,
yeah,
that's for
like,
sure.
It's like, God almighty.
And we have some that aren't in any party, just like it's a reflection of the population.
But what I'm trying to say, Leo,
what I'm trying to say to you, Leo,
yes,
is that you don't know all the answers, and neither do I. I don't know how much was done between 1980 and now on financial.
You know how much was done? Zero, because we're still in the same place.
I don't know.
You know, Lila. You know more than you're willing to believe. All right? You know that nothing was done because we're still in the same place and we're worse off than ever. Okay?
Well, I think it's a disgrace. When companies like Hostess did what they did, that's horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm also very concerned about what's happening in the city of Detroit.
And what's happening with these unions? Why aren't the unions doing something? All right? I mean, you know, in Europe, unions are striking and causing all kinds of havoc, and they run those countries. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in this country, unions got nothing. Okay? They're a joke. They're less than 10% of the working force.
Well, what's happened is that their membership has decreased.
And
so
why is that?
They're losing. Because what's happened a lot of times is that the unions have been driven out of companies.
Why is that?
Because the corporations are so powerful.
That's not true.
Well,
because the people
true.
Don't see any benefit to the union.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, all right, you know,
they've tried to unionize in different places, and what's happened is they're afraid of getting fired.
Well, there you go. I mean, there you go. You know, the thing is there should be a national labor party, okay, just like they have in all these other countries.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
You know, why isn't there a labor party? And the reason there isn't one is because every god-miserable, union has thought that the Democrats were for them. That's not true. The Democrats are for the Democrats. They're for nothing.
Now what
they
have
for nothing.
What they have to do is face that and maybe have a national working party.
But Lila, after 100 freaking years, okay, that's not happening. And I'll tell you why. Because every damn union boss, every major company, is nothing more than a Democratic lackey. You know, I'm sorry, but I mean, I think it has to be said. All right. And I know this. I mean, I'm not kidding. And the only reason unions don't get any respect today is because they're sold out. They have been for years. They're sold out to the mafia. They're sold out to the mob. All right? And their leaders are sold out to the Clintons or to the Obamas, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, stand up and fight for crying out loud. Don't be goddamn political wimps, you know? Our mission and our vision. Let's talk about our mission and our vision.
I can't do this show.
Well, okay, Lila, I'm sorry. But, you know, let's talk real. Let's be real. You know? You want to sing Pete Seeger songs? Let's do that. All right? But, you know, I'm sick and tired of seeing this happening to the unions. Right? I mean, there are really strong people out there that are in the unions. But they're being torn apart. They're being abused, right? By their own people. Anyway. Let us go on. There's so much more to learn tonight about your unions. Right? Educational Postal Service and other resolutions passed at AFL-CIO National Convention. Right? I don't know what this convention is so exciting, but let's see what happens, if anything happens. As the AFL-CIO 2013 convention comes to a close, delegates passed a number of resolutions on Wednesday, including support for the Postal Service, reclaiming the promise of public education and improving the effectiveness of grassroots action in the labor movement, among others. Resolution 28. Solidarity, effectiveness, and accountability at the grassroots, state, federal, and labor council and affiliates. Resolution.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, yeah, who knows. And Resolution 29, in support of American Labor Museum, amended. Right? Resolution 33, the Gateway Pacific Terminal. At 34, reclaiming the promise of public education. Okay. Resolution,
well, that's an important one. I don't know really what they mean by that.
Well, let's look at it and see how exciting that can be. All right? High-quality public education. Want to read that?
This is what they're saying, and this is submitted by the American Federation of Teachers. I think it's just like a statement of what they want. And high-quality public education is an economic necessity, an anchor of democracy, a moral imperative, and a fundamental civil right. Without the foundation of a strong education provides, our other rights can never be fully realized. We believe in and stand ready to fight for public education because it is the means by which we help all children dream their dreams and achieve them. All children, those who have abundant advantages and those for whom every day is a struggle, those who worry about getting into a good college and those who worry about their parents getting deported, deserve the opportunity to succeed. The people who work in schools, teachers, support staff, administrators, help students build lives of great purpose and potential by instilling essential knowledge and skills, including critical reasoning, problem solving, and the ability to work with others, and by promoting civic participation. We are at a critical moment when we must reclaim the promise of public education, not as it is today or it was in the past, but what public education can and should be if we are to fulfill our collective obligation to help all children succeed. Americans across the country are waking up to the fact that decades of top-down edicts, I agree with that, mass school closures, privatization, attacks on collective bargaining, high-stakes student testing with sanctions instead of support for teachers, and other market-oriented education experiments haven't moved the needle, at least not in the right direction. Reclaiming the promise of public education means fighting to ensure the neighborhood schools are safe, welcoming places for teachers and learning, and for the students and families who work there. Reclaiming the promise means ensuring that teachers are well-prepared, supported, and given time to collaborate with their colleagues. Reclaiming the promise means enabling educators to teach an engaging curriculum that includes art and music and sciences. Reclaiming the promise means making sure that kids have access to wraparound services that meet their emotional, social, and health needs. We need to ensure that schools are accessible to families and that their parents are welcomed and supported as partners in the education of their children. Finally, we need to ensure that we keep the public in public education and support schools as fundamental components of our community's infrastructure. Taken together, these actions reflect our prescription for ensuring that all kids have the opportunities they need and deserve. This vision may look different community by community, but it has a few common elements. Reclaiming the promise will bring back the joy of teaching and learning. It's the way to make every public school a place where parents want to send their kids, teachers want to teach, and children want to learn. It makes our public schools the center of community and fulfills their purpose as an anchor of our democracy and a propeller of our economy. Our movement can be the centerpiece of this vision for our children. Not only are the individuals who work in schools and the education system members of the AFL-CIO affiliated unions, but union members are also parents and grandparents, school out volunteers, and active participants in their communities. In short, all of us are connected to public education. The AFL-CIO is uniquely positioned to join with our affiliates, parents, community, and civic leaders. Therefore, we resolve as a labor movement to meet the needs of all children and working families by, one, fighting to ensure that all children have the opportunity to attend grade schools that provide a self and welcoming environment. Let's see, what else? 2, educating union members and working families about the importance of engaging curriculum by promoting a greater understanding of the Common Core standards and what they mean to the children's education, mobilizing our members to advocate for implementation of the standards in the way that is fair and fully supported at the federal, state, and local levels, raising awareness around the obsession with high-stakes testing and test preparation and the negative effects it is having both on students and the quality of the overall curriculum, and expanding existing union programs that provide curriculum supports as Share My Lesson and First Book. 3, advocating for investment in the teaching profession to ensure that teachers are well prepared and supported by working for comprehensive teacher development and evaluation systems that do not deny teachers their due process, increased opportunities for ongoing professional development so they can improve their skills, and providing fair compensation systems. Educating our members about the role of community schools and joining with education, unions, and others to increase the number of community schools, places that bring together wraparound services to help meet the social, emotional, health, and nutrition needs of students and families. Advocating for comprehensive multi-provider system that ensures voluntary access to high-quality, affordable early childhood education and care from birth forward, so our youngest children are ready to succeed when they enter school, and advocating for equitable wages for the early education workforce. That's absolutely needed. Mobilizing our members to fight for federal, state, and local legislation, policies, and funding that ensure our children have the great public schools they deserve. Encouraging all unions to seek contract provisions that enable parents and guardians to participate fully in their children's education, including family and parental leave, to attend school meetings, and to volunteer in schools. I think that's very important.
La-di-da. You know, these guys have done nothing, okay, to protect their own jobs, right? And that's the sad part about it, okay, the teachers' unions. And
well,
they've allowed all these things to happen.
They need to stand up, and
they do, but they're wimps. They're wimps and wussies, and unfortunately,
I think one of the most important things that
they're not supported by across the country by other unions.
I think it's really important that they speak out against all this testing, which is taking so much time away from direct service to kids.
Well, they do, but they don't do anything. I mean, it's like a really sad situation because they're really not, they're complaining, but they're not doing anything.
Well, they need to work on a national level. They need not small town by small town. They need to do that as well on a grassroots level, but they also need to get some national movement.
But they're not doing it nationally. They're not doing anything nationally. Everything is local, you know. And even the locals don't even support the locals. I mean,
I've heard that there was some writings in our local paper about petitioning to opt out of all this testing that we do.
Well, that's a wonderful thing, but
the local people are tired of that, and the teachers are tired of it. They have kids in the school too, you know.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens. Yeah, the fact that our local paper even mentioned anything like that is incorrect.
I'm not sure whether it was our local paper or...
I doubt it. Our local
paper is maybe a paper out of a nearby city.
Our local paper is such a joke. It never gets to talk about anything other than, non-profit for saving pets' butts or something, you know what I mean? It's like unbelievable. What a joke of a place we got. Anyway, Trump sure elected to lead the AFL-CIO. All right. Well,
I don't know. Let's just move on from there to something.
You don't care about that one,
either. I want to go to...
Trump was reelected. Well, that doesn't make any difference. Show it. Don't say it. 10 ways to change how people see unions. Huh. You want to see that one?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Maybe. I would like to see that because I'd like to see a way to change my opinion of what I've seen, you know, over the years.
Okay, let me read this. Lazy, out of touch, greedy, self-serving, and thuggish. Chances are you've heard a union member or leader called one of these things in all likelihood more than once, and it made your blood boil. The unfortunate truth is that misconceptions, stereotypes, and all-out lies seem to be not dominating the public discussion and perception of labor unions, even among some progressives. We in the labor movement know that unions stand for the working class as the sole and vital counterbalance to corporate greed and excess, but no one else seems to have gotten the memo. The disconnect between what we actually do and what others think we do is the impetus behind today's action session at the AFL-CIO convention entitled 10 Ways to Change How People See Unions, featuring AFL Secretary Treasurer Elizabeth Schuler. This session focused on reintroducing unions to America by focusing on what we actually do every day for families. Let's see. Shula, who's confessed she's been called, people are starting to realize that workers need a voice at work, but they're still not connecting the dots that the labor movement is that voice. Unless workers believe unions are that voice, we're in trouble. But according to some new polls, many demographics, including young people, women, and people of color, are especially open to joining unions. They just don't think our closed club in that there's a perception is open to them. We can talk all day long. Okay. Number 10, put workers at the center of the union and out front. Unions are about workers coming together for the greater good, but many people still picture union bosses and thugs when they hear the word union. Don't just shout. Connect based on shared values and emotions. Oh, this is just telling union people how to work, how to handle it at work. It's not really what you were interested in, Leo.
Well, doing it. I mean, I read it. It's more interesting than Shumka being reelected.
Well, when you're talking to people, talk about your family, your community, and justice. These are values we all share, but those outside the labor movement don't seem to recognize that we should stand for the same things they do. Be surprised and use humor. When you find creative, fun, and edgy ways to comment on an issue, you can connect with new people who you may never have been able to reach otherwise. Show up in new and unexpected places. We have to be in new spaces where most of America is spending their time. That's online, using Facebook, YouTube, and blogs. Uphold the highest ethical standards. That's the best way to break out of stereotypes. Show that we're problem solvers. Our unions are constantly finding new ways to improve our work sites for both ourselves and the people we serve. That's true. Stand for quality and the common good. Our members pride themselves on their work. Be real partners in the community. Bridging the gap between unions and community groups can establish labor as an integral tool to improve our communities instead of the self-serving special interest perception that comes to mind for far too many Americans. Innovate. The notion of innovation is really associated with unions these days, but we most definitely are doing cutting-edge things. By painting unions and members as innovators, we can rebuke the notion that labor is out of touch and no longer relevant.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something, folks. This is the reality. If you continue to support Democrats, right, in these elections, okay, and not open up your own Labor Party, then you're doomed. You know, you're doomed. The Labor Party has ruled England for many, many years,
mm-hmm.
right? And they have strong labor there. They have strong unions.
Well,
one
of the problems here is that you can't seem to get a third party.
That's correct.
For Republicans and Democrats.
If the unions would mobilize and say, we're not voting, or start their own party and vote for their own party, then by God, they'd probably wipe out both parties. You know?
Well, one of the problems that Ralph Nader had, who ran as an independent, was that both the Democrats and the Republicans worked very hard to keep him out of the debate, off television, so that we couldn't get another party. And that's really what we need.
But unions, labor has a voice. And all they have to do is stand up and say, hey, we're the guys that telecast these things. We're the unions that you know, they're the ones that are that are televising these things. They're all unionized.
Yeah.
Right? We're not gonna work. Let the Republicans televise themselves. Right? Well, you know, then all of a sudden that would happen, wouldn't it? But the problem is that the unions in this country are so weak, so withered, okay, that they don't have the balls to stand up, you know?
They very rarely, anybody
no,
really
you
strikes
know that. You
anymore.
I
would like to see if one union goes out, everybody goes out.
Every union in the country goes out, and that's what happens. And if it was a day, a week, or a month, my God, that's what it should be, all right?
If you live in a state and there's a union that goes on strike, that everybody supports that union.
I mean, listen, folks, I'm not anti-union. And Lila may think, you know, you're saying bad things. But you know what? Unions have become wimps. Union has become infiltrated by Republican ridiculous people, all right? Unions have destroyed themselves, all right? To the extent that, you know, the AFL-CIO just lost 40,000 members. Okay.
That's a lot of members.
40,000 longshoremen, okay, denounced the AFL-CIO.
I don't know. Where did they go? Did they go to a different union?
No, they went there their own, okay, because they negotiated their own things, okay? They don't want to deal with this crap with the AFL-CIO Obamacare.
They don't want the health care.
Want Obamacare because it's a nightmare from hell, all right? So, you know, folks, you gotta.
It's a real sore point with a lot of union members.
Oh, it sure is. And the thought of what's happening these days is just it's just overwhelming. You know that we are so duped, okay, by these people, so damn duped. Yeah, and I want to go to that article. I'll bring that up right now. Just wait one second.
I mean, that's really frightening that they lost that many members.
Oh, it's frightening, yes. Yeah.
Sure. That's how union strength gets destroyed.
There's so much information that if you happen to be on Facebook, folks, you might want to go to this because just check out my site.
Well, they can find it.
No,
just
I just
want to
read it. I want to read it myself.
Yeah.
there.
The end result is the same, death and destruction.
Yeah, amazing, huh? Well, you know what made me laugh today? There was supposed to be 2 million bikers riding down through Washington, D.C., right, making a big stir. Well, they said that they're going to ride down anyway, but they're going to obey all the traffic laws. They're going to be nice. They're going to, you know, be nice guys, you know, and do everything nice. All right, and you know, they're going to join the Christian group because they were denied their own they were denied a permit. Okay, so they're going to be nice Christian guys, and you know, that's what's going on here. Remarkable, huh? I mean, you know, you realize, folks, that 90% of bikers today aren't Hell's Angels. They're all accountants, lawyers, wannabe bikers.
Okay,
you know?
let's
you know,
move
it's,
to something
it's like
else.
A total
let's
joke.
Move to something else, Leo.
Anyway.
I'd like to move to some news, some David Icke news.
Some David Icke news. He's not too exciting this one today.
Well, he did. He had some very good things on last night that you didn't look at or read.
Okay, dear. This may very well be...
Another site that we can go to.
Yeah, well, let's decide that in a minute, and we'll go get, we'll do that, and we'll be back in a second. Central banks are all at it, counterfeiting money.
So, you know, you wonder why your money is getting useless and worthless. Well, European Parliament, September 10th.
You got to turn it on.
President Commissioner, not for the first time I rise to give you the benefit of my 35 years' experience in financial services, I suspect, rather more than the rest of you put together. Let me put you right on how this all started. It started with something called the Community Reinvestment Act in America. And the reason the whole thing has gone wrong is because political interference. And we've been talking today, haven't we, about due diligence. Due diligence in banking. Well, the Community Reinvestment Act actually stopped banks carrying out due diligence. It was illegal to actually inquire of a borrower whether he could or could not repay the loan. And that's when you saw the invention of subprime mortgages, which never existed before. So it was political interference in the market which caused the subprime crisis. And if you add to that the bubble in the property market was created by criminal fraudulent central bankers printing money and artificially restraining interest rates, as central banks are still doing now. The Fed is still doing it. The ECB, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, they're all at it, counterfeiting money. So we're lending money now at a far too cheaper rate, and we just print more money, and we're going to have another bubble, and we're going to do the whole thing all over again. And may I just close with just one thing, because it's something you don't understand, clearly. If you can't foreclose on a mortgage, nobody will give you a mortgage. That's how the market works. Leave it to the market, caveat emptor, and let people get on with it without interference from politicians who, frankly, do not know what they are talking about.
En nombre de los...
Sure, folks.
I guess he is irritated and angry.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, politicians.
Oh, yeah. They're
and they ought to stay out of health care, too.
They should stay out of anything. They don't know.
Everything they touch, they wreck.
Yeah, they do. They honestly do.
They take a system that's good. They take Medicare in this country, which works.
Yeah.
They can't wait to destroy it.
Oh, instead they give us Obamacare, and
instead,
it doesn't work.
Instead they want to institute this Obamacare, which is ridiculous. Instead of just taking Medicare and turning it into universal health care, a system that works beautifully. But no, they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Leo, I'm not interested in that.
You're not interested?
No.
This is so funny. This cracked me up so much. 2 million bikers ride to Washington, D.C. to reclaim their rights. They're showing all these Looney Tunes, these bikers riding down a highway. Okay, they're not even in Washington, D.C. And they're saying, oh, there they come, you know. Well, it wasn't big enough for the news to carry tonight.
This is good. The mystery of the Federal Reserve, maybe that would be something that could interest people.
It's probably a little longer than it should be.
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank is a fraud. It was created in 1913 through an act of Congress. Many people who don't know the story should read a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island,
right?
Yeah, by G.O.R. Griffin. And the Fed, again, this has been said over and over, but it's not federal and it has no reserves. The Federal Reserve, in essence, is a private institution that has zero accountability. It has zero oversight. We have numerous videos on our website, ftmdaily.com, of case in point of the Federal Reserve being in front of Congress and having zero answers to questions that we should expect as citizens to have from a central bank. If you're a bank and you want to make profits, do you want to lend to somebody like me or you, or do you want to lend to Walmart? I think you want to lend to Walmart because
right.
You're going to get a lot better return, and you're also going to get a guaranteed return.
Sure.
Almost.
A lot of assets to back it up.
Absolutely. Now, if you're a bank, do you want to lend to Walmart or do you want to lend to the United States government? Well, it all depends. It all depends. Does that government have a federal income tax where the government can actually stick their hands into your pockets, pull money out by force, and then give it to the banksters?
Mm-hmm.
If they do, that the bank wants to lend to the government. So in 1913, they passed first a federal income tax. Then came the Federal Reserve Act. And that allowed then a guarantee to be made to the bank, don't worry, we're going to borrow from you, and we'll pay you interest. And if we ever can't come up with the cash or cough it up, you know, we have this income tax. We can always go extract from the people. So the Federal Reserve, in many ways, is unnecessary. It's a fraud. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says that the United States has the permission, the Congress has the express permission to coin money and regulate the value thereof. It never gives the Congress the ability to outsource certainly not to a private, autonomous banking system that is known for its corruption worldwide. The Federal Reserve has a lot to answer. Over $9 trillion has left our economy, has left their printing press to foreign banks. Part of the bailout that occurred back in 2008-2009, there were all kinds of unbelievable reports coming out from the Congress and no answers. So the Federal Reserve is an absolute fraud and needs to be ended. And then what you would have to do is you would have to basically take that back to Congress. Now, Congress doesn't want the Article 1, Section 8, because they realize that if they actually coined the money, well, A, if you coin money, what are you going to coin it out of? What did George Washington say? Gold and silver.
Yeah.
And he passed the Coinage Act of 1792. George Washington said this whenever he signed the bill. And the bill reads this way. If anyone ever creates paper money, ever, let him be hung. Hang on. It's death penalty. Now, Currency Act of 1792. Well, now his picture, you know, it graces the face of the $1